Bird Chalice. We're back for our next segment. Now, my plan was for this half hour that David Perkins gives his opinion of Tom's musical theory, and for the last segment, David, an old friend from Israel, actually dropped in on me, something very rare to have a visitor like that. I was thinking just a personal last segment. But David, are you there? David? Tom, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm not sure why we're missing David.
Oh, no. Did he call in?
Oh, boy. Nick, are you there? That mucks things up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I can't do this musical theory section.
Oh, I heard a click. Hello? Oh, no.
Tom?
I'm back.
All right. You know, we've got this... I hate screw-ups. I really do. I plan these things, and I hope they work out. But I'm going to talk medicine before music. First of all... Pardon me?
Fair enough.
First of all, let me plug myself. I do that once a show. And, look, I've got all kinds of books. They're at lulu.com. That's www.lulu.com. As soon as you get there, you'll see a search box right in my name. C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That's how you spell Chamish. You'll go right to my books. My website is barrychamish.com. And let's go. We can do a little health. And as I said, if David doesn't show up, we're going to have to ad-lib all over the place. But you had an accident, and you lost a lot of money. Let's start talking about it.
Okay. When I was basically working in industry, but I was, I had my little hobbies. The music was one of them, but, I hadn't really spent a lot of time with it. Not like I did after the accident and after I recovered. But what happened was, and I still remember the day, April 5th, 2007. It's almost like a Pearl Harbor day for me. A 16-year-old drunk driver high on methamphetamine struck my vehicle doing 118 miles an hour. I was thankful it was a Toyota RAV4. If it had been just about anything else, I wouldn't be talking to you.
That's an especially strong car?
I found out later, yes. Even though it was 2002, it was still a really strong car. And if it had been anything else,
all right,
small
so
like
if you've
that,
been driving
be
a Rambler, we wouldn't be talking right now.
Right. And so if Obama wants to trash Toyota, I'm not going to be a part of it. I appreciate them, and I appreciate the fact that I'm still alive to talk to you about these things.
All right. You have, nonetheless, injuries.
Yes. I was, for at least 8 minutes, I was out cold. Because the next thing I knew, the cops were coming, and at first they thought I was dead, too. I had to pound on the window because I couldn't open the window and yell out because it was all locked up. And finally came over.
Okay,
somebody came over.
Hello?
Good evening. This is David Perkins.
Oh, David. A little late there, but nonetheless, welcome. Look, this section I want you and Tom to discuss. We were starting something that someday we'll talk about American health and what you really have to pay. Pardon me?
I just thinking about it.
We'll do it another time. David.
Yes.
For this half hour, you've got Tom. Well, I tried to get his theory of biblical music explained. It wasn't so simple. Why don't you try it? Tell me what you think he's doing, and tell me if you think it's a good strategy or an accurate one.
Okay, I had some conversation with Tom, and the first question that I would ask, so you presented, is that how is it that you determined what pitches corresponded with each of the Hebrew letters?
No, all right, Tom, answer that.
Oh, I thought he was going to express his opinion.
No,
okay, I'm sorry.
Very poorly done, but answer that and let him go on.
Okay, it was sort of a trial and error process. At first, I just tried, subjectively putting an aleph to, let's start with C major. Everybody knows that. It's the simplest key you can play anything in. And so I would put these letters, and I'd go C, D, E, F, G, and then I'd go up the Hebrew letter chain until I got to, and then I just go up the keyboard, because let's assume we're looking at a piano keyboard, that's the easiest way. So we'd start at the C in the bass clef and go all the way up to the last note in the treble clef. And then I would try to play music. Didn't sound real great. One of the things that music requires is a lot of practice, a lot of trial and error, a lot of research, trying to understand what the original people tried to do.
David, answer that and don't lop it off after 10 seconds with a question back to Tom.
Okay. Let's see. If I understand you correctly, first let me mention to the listening audience that I'm a musician. I play many instruments, and I've studied a bit of, the Bible as well, in Hebrew, in Jerusalem, and other places. As I understand it, Tom, you used another system along with your own to help you come up with the pattern that you used.
Okay. Well, as I said, as I started to research this further, I started realizing that what I was doing wasn't coming up with the music I'd hoped for. It actually didn't sound very good. But many times when we sight read, we don't necessarily sound very good. So I started coming up with progressions and starting C, D, F, G, A, B on the C, D, and using octaves. So the first 10 letters were at one octave, the second 10 letters were a second octave, and the last four were third octave.
Why 10? It should be 7.
Or 9. I mean, I'd start C and end up with D and then go up to the next octave, because when you associate Hebrew values with Hebrew letters, Aleph is 1, Beis is 2, Gimel is 3.
But then you get up. An octave has 8 notes, and the final one is the next.
Yes.
So why use 9?
Again, because of the letter values of the Hebrew letters. Because they dictate 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But then when you get to Yod, it goes 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70.
What does that mean?
So,
what does that mean? 10, 20... Now you're talking Kabbalah. You're talking something very different. You're talking reading the Kabbalistic symbols. Is that what this does? You're using okay, first of all, let's get back to David. David, you react.
Okay, so as I understand it, you would take a note, And, you know, the Hebrew alphabet, there are 22 basic letters, and then five letters that are repeats, sort of, and they're just the final consonants. So with 22 letters that you've got, if you're going to say, okay, I'll take the first set that correspond with numbers 1 through 9, and say that's a range of notes, it's 9 notes. And then the next range of notes, starting from Yud up to Tzadik, is 9 more notes. And as far
right.
as I remember, you mentioned to me, Tom, those are 2 ranges of 9 notes that you selected somewhat subjectively. And how is it that you determine those 9 notes, which go, you know, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, D, meaning 9 notes? Because an octave is 8 notes. Like an octagon is 8.
Right.
You have chosen, subjectively, to take the 9 Hebrew letters corresponding with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 for our listening audience. That's Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zion, Tet, and Tet. The 9 letters, and then you chose 9 notes in a sequence to come up with.
Right.
And then you took the next set of 9 Hebrew letters, which numerically corresponds to 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, and 90, and you chose another range, another set of 9 notes, and then that's 9 and 9 is 18, there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet.
Right.
So for the 4 final letters, then I remember speaking with you, and you said you used those to help you create the baseline in your music.
Right.
Well, wait a minute. So, where's the basic Western music concept of do, re, mi, fa? Where are the basic notes? Are the first 9... Now, I'm going to take a guess here. The first 9 letters, are they do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, re, mi, fa? Is that what they are?
They can be.
What does that mean?
Okay, basically, I use a starting point. And for the example I've given here, C major, I would start with the note C, probably in the bass clef. And then I would go C, Aleph would be C, bass would be D, Gimel would be E. And then I'd go up. And then what I would do is then the next set of letters, when they have a value of 10, 20, 30, I would make them, that would start them on a new octave. And again, start with C, D, E, F, G, and apply them to Yod, Kaf, Lamed, Bein.
All right, David, does that work?
Yes, actually. So, because what you have then is you have a set of notes. The interesting question which comes up, dare you ask that, I've heard it from other people, is, well, could someone else do the same thing in the way that they wanted to choose a set of notes? So, Tom, if you were going to speak to someone else out there in the listening audience, what would you suggest as far as if they wanted to create music based upon the order of notes that got infinite light coming through the Bible, how could someone else choose to do it their way to create biblical music?
Again, there's a lot of ways you could do it theoretically, but as you well know in music, you always are looking for the right way, the perfect way that sounds right. You know, it's like you practice and practice and practice to get something down right, and then that day comes when you do get it right.
Do you have samples of your music that you've recorded, Tom?
Oh, yes. Go to themusicofheaven.com and also Project...
Wait, say that a little slower. Say it so that our listeners can write that down.
You were there already. You heard the music.
Yes, I heard the music, and it's nice music.
You're giving him a chance to plug himself. Let's hear an answer here. The music itself. Let's say that I use this system. I turn to the Torah, and I find that very lyrical. There's lots of lyrical stuff in the Torah. If you read Hebrew and you know a little about the grammar, there's some very beautiful stuff in the Torah, but not too many people know how to read the Torah. It turns out I know better than I thought. But nonetheless, if you take this system and you take a musical segment of the Torah, are you going to end up with Ain't Too Proud to Beg by the Temptations? I mean, what are you going to come up with?
Good question. Actually, what I found is that the system that Tom used, actually someone else came up with it, I'll let him describe or tell you the email address for that, it permits you to take a Hebrew letter and select the corresponding notes. What you then get is you get the, well, I will begin with my faith. I believe that God being infinite, the Torah is an infinite thing in a way that humans, people can perceive. So that it's still an aspect of the infinite divinity in the order of the letters, regardless of what they mean. So
no,
somehow,
you have to have the letters correspond with the words of the Torah, or what are you doing?
You're
trying to make
First
the
off,
Torah
you don't have to
music.
Understand everything. Yeah, I said, if you're going to say it's infinite, okay, I'll say, yeah, it's infinite. So the order of letters, separate from the meaning of the word, is still a reflection of godliness in the world. So anybody can take that same sequence, and somehow it gets filtered through their creativity, through a system that's limited by the people who created it, and, well, I would say that's still a reflection or a concentration of some type of this infinite godliness as it was written in words.
I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't. Are we getting the music, or are we getting one person's interpretation of how he would like it to sound?
I say both. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Well,
now, God's infinite. He can come through in an infinite number of different types of music. So it's not that there's only one music that can be written from the patterns that are in the Torah. Tom has chosen to do it his way. So he's got a lot of subjective things to it.
I mean, way back then, 3,000 years ago, when they were using the reggae beats. You know, I mean, doo-wop. I mean, there's all kinds of questions here. Look, you're fudging. That's what you're doing right now, is you're fudging. Is this biblical music or not?
Oh, wait a minute. Is it music from the time of the Bible, or is it inspired by the Word of God?
I understood that this was turning the Bible into its original music.
Oh, no, we're not saying original music. I don't think Tom claimed that he's writing the original music that the prophets were listening to when they transcribed.
Now, are you saying that, Tom?
Oh, okay. Actually, what I'm, you know, further deep down in my head, I would like to.
What's your intention here?
Well, again, when I first started, it was basically to come up with another form of music, another, how would you call it, just another form of music. But then since that time, I've started to develop it into other things as I've started to...
How come no one answers straight off?
Because it really isn't a good... I can't say whether it's real or close, because I haven't heard it. I wish I had.
No, but it's, you're trying to.
But I'm trying to do something to maybe get us a little bit closer. And that's what I would encourage anybody who tries this to do, is to see if they can get a little closer.
I thought your aim was to try and bring back history, a dead history, and bring it to life again, bringing back the music of the Torah.
Well, in some ways, that's the goal. In some ways, that's the goal. But again, it's hard because unless I can find a time machine, somebody's got a time machine, I'd love to go back and listen to what David did. But until I can do that, everything I try is going to be just a little bit subjective. And
Barry, you're insisting that there's
only something sacred for the time period when the Bible was written. God is infinite. The Torah is good for all time. So it can make music of today, not just music of 3,000 years ago.
All right, I'm just not going to respond because I don't know what you're saying. Either we find a formula
try this again.
That
wait
brings
Mary, let me
David's
try this
root to life, or we don't.
There's a pattern, and I listen to Tom's music, and I'd recommend people listen to it and say, that's interesting. There's a pattern based upon some selection of notes, based upon the pattern of letters in some selection of the Bible.
Right. So in other words,
just
we are repeating the musical pattern of the Bible.
Yeah, but it's the order of how God put the letters in the Bible. I don't claim to understand it. It's just based upon a sequence that is some kind of godly code.
Well, do you get good music out of that?
Yeah, because the way you took the godly code and processed it, there's a guy in Australia who came up with a system whereby he's got it encoded, and you can choose what notes to substitute for your letter. And then based on that, Tom did a little bit more to make it creative, and he came up with his music, subjectively choosing how long for notes to be, and whether to put a bass note here or a bass note there. And he came up with something, his style. So, but since it says clearly in the Bible, make a new song to God, Tom made his new song. Somebody else, I would certainly encourage them. Hold on a second, got a little noise over here.
That's
I would certainly encourage somebody else to make their own new song, but it is based upon some infinite sequence of Hebrew letters in the Bible.
All right. Tom, can you react?
I think he's hit it pretty well, because, you know, I would encourage people to try this. I haven't shared a lot of my research, and in time I probably will. But for now, what I've done is I put it up on my website. And because...
All right, now you can plug yourself. Where do you hear the music?
Okay. TheMusicOfHeaven.com is one of them. I have another special set of music under ProjectRPL.org. And
RPL. Is it Project RPL?
Yeah, ProjectRPL.org.
All right, now look, Tom, stay on the line if you'd like. I'm going to change the subject for the last 20 minutes. David, I think, is the first person I knew in Israel who came to visit me in St. Augustine. So I'm going to just do some personal stuff. But stay on the line.
Sure.
It's only another half hour, and who knows? I think David might... want a word or two with you then. David, are you ready to talk of your visit yesterday?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to talk about it. I had a great time. I came down, drove down, and we decided to stop by your place because I was going down further in Florida. And
we're running out of time. We have to take a 3-minute break. If I hadn't phoned David about Tom, he may not have thought of coming to visit me in St. Augustine yesterday. So something divine happened that I had this great idea. Let's put David on here to try and understand what Tom is doing. Now, we'll be back in 3 minutes for a more personal interview with David Perkins and our other guest, of course, is Tom Mack.
Yeah, I'm here.
Good show. We always have good shows. I'm getting the hang of this. Look, David Perkins visited me yesterday with his girlfriend. I want to say, David, I spoke with my wife, Cindy, And we both agree that you're good for each other. You're both challenging people who are willing to put up with each other. That's the key. We saw lots of good things in there, and we were pleased with that. And I think, actually, you got Cindy to move in a good direction. She, I don't know what she's afraid of, but she just doesn't want to do complicated things with me. She's scared of me, apparently, but I'm going to speak in Deerfield Beach, Florida on the 17th, and she wouldn't come with me again. I don't know what she's afraid of, honest. I never figured that out. Now she will. I think a little talk with Robin actually helped that. So it was very, it was a good meeting.
Yes, actually, I thought it was a great meeting. As you mentioned a few minutes ago, yeah, sure, I knew you lived in Florida, and I'm up north, you know, 10, 12 hours drive, and I was planning on coming down to Florida, and you called me, and I said, look, look at that. We'll stop over and see you. So, you know, we drove down, and instead of continuing straight down south, we came over to see you, and I'm really happy we did, because, it, you know, it gave us a stopping point. We got the next 5 hours the next day. I place, you know, stay over your place. We got to talk about old times in Israel and catch up on, you know, mutual friends and great conspiracy theories and all this stuff.
Well,
and it's beautiful.
I do research, but nonetheless, first of all, St. Augustine is really quite a town to fall into. I assume you were impressed by this city.
Oh, hey, beautiful. This is on the east coast, the northeast coast of Florida, and the weather is great. I came from where it was just about freezing up in Tennessee, and this is magnificent weather. The breeze is blowing. We're walking on the oldest fort walls in the United States, this old Spanish fort, and going around the old city. I came down with my, I guess I could say, my fiancé. It's a very interesting way that we met. And I said, okay, let's go down, pick up your stuff. We had just known each other for a short while. And after we decided to go down and pick up our stuff in Florida, then Barry calls and says, hey, what do you think about this musician guy? So I said, I'll be on the radio.
Well, yes. That was how to, do my best to get my audience to understand concepts that I sure can't explain. But, you know, this city, look, this area, you go to Jacksonville and you've got yourself a crime problem. You've got a real problem with murders there. I watch the TV news every night. There's a murder a day. St. Augustine somehow has maintained order. It's the America that used to be without the crime, and it makes for a better life than, boy, almost anywhere in this country is going straight downhill.
Well, what I see, okay, we kept coming down Florida. I'm down in what is called Port Christine or Punta Gorda over here, and Florida's spread out. It's not as packed The urban concentration is so much less, and even down here, it's like, oh, people go outside and play at night and walk around and don't worry as much.
Florida, go to Miami walk around at night and see how much you don't worry. Listen, all I can tell you is that my town so far is very secure, and you can go out at night and not worry. There are plenty of towns that you can't, all through Florida. Go walk around Orlando at night, see how much you don't worry.
I thought it built up. But I'm driving around here, and you got so much open space. I think that the space factor, and, you know, Florida lost a lot of money. A lot of people just left. There's not as much money around. But I can't speak for the whole state, but the peace of mind, hey, we went to the beach today on the west coast of Florida. No matter if the waves are not anywhere as big as St. Augustine. 2 days in a row, I had the pleasure. First, I go walk on the pier in St. Augustine over to Crashing Waves Fishermen, and the next day, I'm walking on the west coast of Florida with my feet in the sand and the surf, picking up seashells. Certainly it's been a pleasure for me here in Florida.
Look, all I can say, let's get to the personal stuff. We didn't see the Fountain of Youth. That's a tourist highlight in St. Augustine. I forgot his name. Found the Fountain of Youth for the Spanish.
Ponce de Leon.
Thank you. Ponce de Leon. And it's a miracle. People have gone in there and left with one little dunk. They've left it in diapers.
It's nice. There's water. There are minerals in the water. Italy, it's going to go down in Israel to the Dead Sea. People claim there are
this
amazing.
This is the Fountain of Youth. It changes people backwards decades with one dunk.
Well, I mean, that's a good trick. I didn't personally see
it's
it.
It's a beauty.
And,
that's what they're selling. All right. Just to ask you a question. Was Robin born Jewish?
Say that again?
Robin, was she born Jewish?
Yes.
Oh, so there's no fooling around. You get yourself a genetic Jew.
Yeah, that's right. That was the intention. Look, here's how it worked. I bought this place up in Knoxville, and I fixed it up, and I dealt with all sorts of nonsense from the government. And finally, the grass grew into the end of all the terraced gardens. So I'm walking through my gardens on a path, and I say, okay, guys, I fought the crazy politicians, and I built it up. And it says in the basic prayer of Judaism, serve God with all your heart, your soul, and your resources. I spent all my money. I'm ready. I certainly blew my budget. So now I want a woman. And three days later, Robin contacted me. So I said, oh, okay. And we struck it off. And actually, she listened to me on your radio shows before. And she liked, we liked each other. So she drove up. And then we said, yeah, this works. So then we decided to come down here and pick up all the things and take them back. And then you called me.
You would die alone. I got it. All right.
Okay, I'm still here.
As you know, Cindy wanted to be Jewish. It was a different situation. She was trying to be Jewish. And that was good enough for me. She wanted to convert. She wanted to be Jewish. And that did it for me. And, in some respects, she's taken me back to synagogue. I go to synagogue again. I may not have done it without her. I was just curious if the wives or the fiancé and wives have that in common. Apparently not. Robin is Jewish, and Cindy is a converted Jewess.
Hey, let me take you another step further. The reason that Robin contacted me, in her mind, is because she wanted to have a kid. And I am a professional sperm donor.
Don't go there. All right.
Oh, well, that's how we got together.
Yeah, I know, but don't go there. I know what I'm talking about. Now,
okay, fine, we'll leave that. We decided to get together and make a family.
Good. And I think it's about time, and we were both pleased, and I think Cindy became a bit closer to me. It's not that she's not close, but she just hasn't been spending the time I've been wanting her. Let's put it this way. It did us a lot of good. And also, I want to say something happened which never happened to me in St. Augustine. I'm walking down the street from the fortress, and I hear Hebrew. I hear a mother talking to her child in Hebrew. So I'd start talking Hebrew to her, the usual. And at first she didn't believe it was like a different reality. She couldn't figure out she was listening to Hebrew on this fortress, but I gave in 2 minutes or less. She asked what I was doing here and how I got here. I gave the Rabin conspiracy, the Sharon murder, and the Diane Kissinger sellout of Israel during the Yom Kippur War, all in 2 minutes, completely stunned them, and got to practice my Hebrew again.
What was amazing is we're sitting at the oldest fortress in the United States of America, just about a war place, and the father over there starts talking about his involvement in, I'm not sure which war it was, but he's a warrior. He was in Marines during the war, talking about Nixon Kissinger bombing in Egypt and all this stuff. And we're sitting right outside of a fortress.
Well, I didn't. If you're going to meet an Israeli, you're going to get a soldier, whether you like it or not, unless he's caught a D. You're getting a soldier.
Yeah, it's a good story. But I got I'm all from entertainer. I made a nice balloon flower for her, and she gave it to her baby in the carriage. And then there was another couple there, and I walked over and gave a balloon flower to them.
Let's not confuse the ideas too much, but let's just say that your little trip for one day, I have to give these tours, but I like it. I like this town. I think it's a great town to tour in. So I gave a little tour, but a lot happened during that little tour that was very positive and had a good feel-good to it, you know?
We went to that Presbyterian church, beautiful church there, ancient, the old one there in the city, and I looked up, and way on the inside of the dome, high ceiling, there's a four-letter name in Hebrew, four-letter name of God. I said, oh, that's interesting. And then you got a six-pointed star up there also. So there's definitely Jewish overtone in the Presbyterian church
Masonic.
There.
Masonic. Are you joking? Flagler was a major Mason. That's just Masonic symbols.
I won't
dive into that. That's a separate subject.
Take a six-pointed star. You still got the four-letter Hebrew name of God on the inside of the field.
That was the whole... Well, let's just say it didn't come entirely from Hebrew.
Well, God's infinite, and He works through anything He wants to, including the roof of a church.
So that's what turned you on was, good, what the heck, anything to make it an enjoyable stay. All I can say, and I'm going to repeat it again, for that very brief time, it was remarkably eventful. I should mention, David published books of mine in English in Israel that wouldn't have been published without him. And I'm going to remind you of something. That little sign, people, if you heard our show together, it was about a month ago, and you want to know about the rallies and protests that we were co-participants in. But I'm going to say this. I went to the Christian Embassy Convention in Jerusalem as a journalist. There were 5,000 people in Beit Ha'am waiting to meet Rabin after he had signed Oslo, the Oslo Peace Agreement. I have that little bumper sticker that you still have a copy of. It says, Lech La'Azazel. Lech La'Azazel. It's a pun. It means, go to Gaza, go to hell. And I sat in the front row. I look at the stage. I saw where the stairs went up the stage, where Rabin would have to go up the stairs. I sat in the seat just before he was going to go up the stairs. I stood up when he entered the auditorium, and I shoved that poster, that bumper sticker, in his face. And he looked and he stared, and he, believe me, this was not something you could miss. This wasn't just a protest, it was a personal protest. By the way, the Christian Embassy, that was Stan Goodenough in those days, they led me out. They told me, you can't go back in, but they were also very respectful of what I did. They did not like what the Oslo Peace was doing to Israel.
as far as Rabin being scared of a poster being personal, I remember you gave me that same bumper sticker. I held it up. But there was another very interesting incident where a man went and he reached into the inside pocket of his coat.
Yeah,
and he found something written.
They jumped on him. That was at Wingate.
No, I'm not talking Wingate. Yeah, at Wingate, I held up the bumper sticker you gave me that said, Rabin, Lech Lach, dot, 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 zel, as I was blowing a horn and holding up my middle finger and got all over the Israeli TV was doing it. But a separate incident. A guy reaches into his coat pocket from a coat he hadn't worn in years. He lived in Israel, and he found a note that was written to him from the Lubavitcher Rebbe that was actually meant for Yitzhak Rabin. So he went and delivered it to Yitzhak Rabin. And Rabin's face turned white.
It always was
so
white. When
Rabin
was
notified several times, prophetically across time and by a tremendous number of people angry with the guy, that there was definitely something wrong with what he was doing.
Well, what was the note?
Oh, do I have to remember? It made the news. It made the Israeli news at the time. But it was it written on I don't remember it.
Really.
I do not have all the details. But it was a news item.
All right. Without the punchline, it's not such a great story.
Leave us hanging there.
Say it again?
They're leaving us hanging.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, well, hey, that's sometimes good to do. Leave them wanting more. You got to tune in next week.
That's a good theory, but it's people want to hear the punchline. They don't want to hear more. Listen, I had a concept. I'll talk to Tom now, and then David can answer this. You listening, Tom?
Yeah.
Now, we were listening. I have a favorite radio show. It's music from the 50s and 60s. And I heard a song that I didn't know and I really didn't like. It was by Stevie Wonder, who I didn't like because I've got this problem with blind musicians. They're promoted well beyond their talents. And I brought up a question to David. Why doesn't the music industry grant the same privileges to deaf musicians?
I don't know that I have an answer to that. I have a...
Well, you know, that's a brilliant question, Barry. And I wanted to leave a few seconds for our listening audience to be completely baffled and actually take it seriously.
Yes. You can actually get a few people who do that. Why, they can't hear. Maybe they can't play music.
Well, you think of the most famous deaf musician we know of is Beethoven.
Oh, no,
he started out hearing. There's a difference. Eventually he got deaf. He was sticking his head on the floor so he could hear the vibrations of the strings. But as far as deaf musicians go...
He was not deaf long enough to hear the music, and it stuck in his head, and he wasn't deaf in his head. He knew what the notes sounded like.
Agreed. But he's about the closest I can think of to answering your question.
Well, the most famous one, of course, was Helen Keller.
That's a good point. I would say that there are deaf or deaf-mute people who are capable of creating tremendous things, even though they don't have the capability of perceiving it through their ears.
Well, you know why Helen Keller played piano with one hand?
I refuse to participate in this, Barry.
Yes, I'm being friendly now with old jokes. Tom, do you know?
I have no idea.
You don't know why she played piano with one hand?
I have no idea.
She sang with the other one.
Okay.
Well, I'm being in on this show. We did an hour and a half of serious stuff. David came by yesterday, and we had I loosened up. I really did. The old friends is something I don't get enough of. I'm very isolated from old friends where I am, and it's nice to be able to just joke and be yourself for a few hours of your lifetime.
One thing I'd like to say on that, now, Barry and I lived in Israel at a very interesting time when there was one of the most intense social, religious, and nationalist upheavals. And the two of us were significantly involved with resisting all sorts of horrendous government oppression and foreign country oppression, and we survived to tell about it. There's all sorts of books and there's articles. But a lot of people got murdered in Israel trying to fight for the freedom against various oppressive techniques. And I'm very happy that the two of us can celebrate here in beautiful Florida, enjoying the situation, and that we can relate the history of some of what happened.
Well, on my day-to-day life, it's work. It's always work and research. I mean, always. But it's nice to have friendship back. I've got a wife who, by the way, has a marvelous sense of humor. Really, she's very good company. We laugh at the same things, but that's it. That's it for me. The old days are, you talk on the phone here and there, but it's not the same.
Well, if I'll permit myself or you, God knew this was going to happen too.
What?
And he still promised. The promise given in the Torah that we talked about, ancient patterns for music, is as valid today as it was when it was given through the prophets thousands of years ago.
What theory was given thousands of years ago?
Whatever God said and whatever the prophets of God, the divine viewers, wrote down then, still works today, and it will work in the future.
Let's go back to my usual show. So what you're saying is that Tom's music is valid.
It's a little piece of godliness reflected through how he wanted to write music. The next person will take the infinite godliness of the patterns of the letters of the Torah and the Sefer Yetzirah, do it your way, please. Take the taste of God and make it into music that is perceptible by humanity, and you're not going to write the absolute everything of the Bible and of God. You're going to do your piece. Make your song.
Tom, you react to that. I think that's iffy.
And I don't, because there's still a lot of things that I still have yet to discover in this. There's other ways I can do this. And as I told Mr. Perkins on the phone the other day, even my youngest son came in and suggested something to me. It sounded very plausible to me, and that's what he was listening to. It was a lot from a 25-year-old rugrat. And
what was he listening to?
Well, he was listening to the music as I had done it at that point in time, and he said, "Hey, Dad, why don't you make a couple adjustments here? And I think it'll sound better." So I did, and he was right. Out of the mouth of babes.
All right. So what we have are genuine piece of music. Tell people how to listen to them.
Okay. TheMusicOfHeaven.com. That's the main site. By the way, if you go to WhiteStoneFoundation.org, it's a gateway to all my sites.
All right, let's give David the same opportunity. David, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do it?
Well, you can go to my website, PerkinsMusicShows.com.
Spell that?
I got email, PerkinsMusic@BellSouth.net, or you can pick up the phone and call me at 865-525-5846.
All right. And I'm going to do it. I'm at lulu.com. That's my books. lulu.com. You get there. There's a search box. Write in my name. Chamish. That's how you spell Chamish. And my website is barrychamish.com. All right. We've had a very interesting and I think inconclusive show, I'm going to say. I still have a lot of questions, but a good show. Next week, you'll find out who we have next week. Tom, David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Night, all. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.